Welcome to Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio 89.1 FM, where we explore the people, stories, and events in Central Iowa. I'm your host for today, Pat Schlarbaum. Let's start the day off with the weather forecast for the remainder of the week. It looks like we have pretty nice weather coming up. Today's highs are in the upper 70s. Tonight and tomorrow morning are the only times when rain is predicted, with a 40% chance of showers and thunderstorms in the morning. By the afternoon, sun is likely to return, and then on Friday and through the weekend and the beginning of next week, sunny skies are expected, so a beautiful weekend in the forecast. Temperatures will range in the 70s, going all the way up to 78 on Tuesday. So thank you, our beautiful listener. Thank you for joining us today. We have a good show. We're including Vern Hawkins and Jennifer Garst are with us here in the studio on behalf of the Story County Community Foundation's Community Grant Program. And later, Keith Morgan, our Emergency Safety Coordinator, will speak about the safety of our animals during emergencies. Also, retired ISU anthropology professor David Gradwall and Chris Atkins, naturalist for the Story County Conservation Board, will tell us about the Prairie Awakening Festival this weekend. This yearly event is very special, and if you are not familiar with it, stick around. It'll be worth it. And we'll talk about Maria Pearson, an extraordinary and historic citizen of Iowa, and also here of Ames. So welcome to Local Talk, Jennifer Garst and Vern Hawkins.
Thank you for having us.
Jennifer is the executive director of the foundation, and Vern Hawkins is a foundation board member as well as assistant director of admissions at ISU.
Formerly. I'm happily retired now.
Well, congratulations
Thank
on that.
You.
Yeah. We are here to talk about the community grant. This is due September 30th. And maybe if we can go over who is eligible and maybe some examples of the past applicants.
Cool.
Jennifer?
I'll start with that. We have a grant process each year, and we're able to fund between $80,000 and $100,000 each year. And we just recently found out that we will have in excess of $100,000 to give away this year. And the applications are due September 30th. And eligible applicants are nonprofit organizations, governmental entities such as libraries or parks, as well as a group that does have a fiscal sponsor that is one of those two former groups. So anybody in the county who has a project to benefit the citizens of Story County are eligible to apply. And we're accepting applications, and all information about the grants is available at www.storycountyfoundation.org, all spelled out.
Well, Vern, what are you looking for particularly this year in your community grant foundation?
Well, you know, let me kind of back up a little bit and let you know that we have realized that Story County, residents of Story County, really are service-oriented. They really like to get out and serve the community. Uh-huh. And so basically what we're looking for are ways that we can facilitate the interest people have in this broad Story County community in helping their fellow neighbors.
Well, what a positive outlook for the community. Thank you for that.
Sure.
Well, why would you hope that people would apply?
I guess one of the real reasons, you know, it's kind of near and dear to my heart. Since I've been in Ames, in the Story County community, I've realized how much people are interested in outreach to their fellow man. And so there are a lot of things that we know need to be done, but we're really not sure of what the details are or what the entities are available to help reach out and help those entities and those individuals in need. And so we want people to apply because it helps us become more aware of how we can direct resources to those places that they're most needed.
Yeah.
And I also want to point out the Story County Community Foundation's mission is not only to help individuals give philanthropy dollars or charitable dollars to their community, but part of our mission is to help the community. And through that, we're doing grant making and we also do endowment building. So today we're just talking about one component of what the Community Foundation does, but our goal at the Community Foundation is really to help our county make sure that we're secure now and into the future via grants and endowment building.
Oh, excellent. Wonderful. Well, how do people apply?
They go on to our website. There is an application that has to be filled out, and it will be reviewed by an applications committee that made up primarily of Story County Community Foundation board members. You do not have to be a professional grant writer to obtain a grant.
And
I can tell you examples of grants we've given away, and these organizations are just everyday organizations. So that's a nice part of it. And the joke I always make is the only thing I can guarantee is if you don't apply, you won't get any grant dollars. I have to be frank, is it is a competitive process. We wished we had more money, but we usually are able to fund 30 to 40% of the applications we receive. So it isn't a slam dunk process. But again, if you don't apply, you won't be in the process.
Of course. You just want to get into the mix. And if you're not successful, just stay in there, keep pitching.
Yeah. Let me give some examples of the past grant recipients. So a year ago in November, we do give away one $25,000 grant away each year. And that process has already started. So no one can apply to be in that process at this point. But last year, we awarded that $25,000 to the Story County Fair Association. And they have a community building, which the community is working on refurbishing. And we were able to help with the window renovation of that project. And what's nice about that is all the 4-H kids, that's benefiting the fair. Is part of our community, as well as Nevada uses that as a community center. So that was a relevant project for us because it helped a wide range of people, and it also helped the community itself kind of help itself with its own events and such.
Boy, and the dual purpose of any facility like that, that's a real strength.
And then kind of other grants that we gave away last year, we gave $1,200 to Actors, which is a all-volunteer group, and now they have online ticketing systems so people can go to their plays and they don't have to mail in a check or go to the box office. They can go online and buy a ticket.
Really streamlines that process.
Yeah. And again, it wasn't a lot of money. $1,200, you know, in the scheme of things, it's not huge, but without that money, they've told us that they wouldn't have been able to do that. That's a lot of money for a small nonprofit.
What an inspirational trigger you provide.
And the Actors Grant, we give away as many through the process after we give our $25,000 grant away, we give as many $6,000 grants as we can afford. And so it ranges from Actors. Another example is the Boys and Girls Club of Story County. They were looking to expand their work into Nevada. And so we helped with startup costs so that they could start a Boys and Girls program in Nevada for the after-school kind of programming. And again, it's where else would they go for that startup initial funding?
Well, when did your organization get started?
10 years ago. Actually, we're going to celebrate our 10th anniversary.
Oh,
we're having a little soiree tonight.
Yeah. And where is that?
It's going to be at the Octagon, but it's kind of we've invited our friends to come and say, woohoo, we're 10 years old.
Uh-huh.
And because of our longevity, we have been able to give away over $800,000 in grants.
Since we
started in 2005, and we have given away $800,000. So that's a pretty amazing amount
that
of money.
That is incredible. What, you know, for the seed money, as you say, to get organizations with good goals and visions implemented.
One thing that people always ask me about is, where do you get the money? you know, right. that we have this money. And part of the reason that Story County Community Foundation started was because of grant dollars. At that point, our legislature decided that gaming, we a lot of us are long-term Iowans. You remember when everybody was going to dig a hole in a cornfield and float a boat so they could have a riverboat casino? The legislature, thankfully per me, said, time out. Let's not do that. What we're going to do is have state chartered gaming and share the revenues with every county that doesn't have gaming. That is where this grant money is coming from, is the gaming revenue comes to our county every year since this has started. And we've actually received over $1 million from this program, but 25% of it has to go into a permanent endowment. So it's for the future grants.
Okay.
And we are required to distribute 75% of the dollars, and that's the $800,000 we've given away.
Mm-hmm.
So it's kind of a fun program of making sure that each county that doesn't have gaming is able to partner with that industry and help our own communities in the way that are important for our communities.
Right.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, what a far-reaching opportunity that
the
legislators realize that everybody can benefit from these new gaming opportunities.
Another source of funding, I do want to take credit or give credit to the citizens of Story County. That's the vast majority of our grant dollars, but we also have people in the county who are donating money directly for our granting process.
Mm-hmm.
They seem to think, as Vern pointed out, our application process gets into the far reaches of the county where people might not know a need exists. And so donors are donating money for our grant process as well.
Mm-hmm.
So it's largely the gaming revenue, but people are really supporting their community
people
through this granting.
Well, that's just fantastic. So what was the time of your 10th year anniversary?
Well, it's I'm not even sure we have an exact date, but this is our 10th year, and this will be our 11th granting process right now.
Okay.
So.
Yeah, it's kind of an internal celebration kind of thing where we're throwing up our hands and going, whoa, you know, and looking forward to the next 10 years.
Yeah. Well, as people provide you with their grant applications, I'm sure they're going to appreciate your smiling faces. Well, we just celebrated our third anniversary.
Yeah.
And
congratulations
to
you.
For a community radio station. I mean, these are no small steps into the... Yeah.
You know, one thing, it occurs to me that some of our listeners might be riding around and don't have a pen and paper and weren't able to write down the our email address or our website address. So Just remember Story County Community Foundation. You can Google that, and it'll take you right to our site, and then that will direct you to the grant writing. So any of you who are driving along right now, don't stop and pull out a pen and paper and try to write while you're driving. Just remember Story County Community Foundation. It'll direct you to our website with the directions on submitting the grant application.
Well, this is, and the KHOI have been the recipients of your benevolence to getting this station going, too.
Well, I mean, I'm looking at this thing with lots of colors on it, and we bought that where we helped you buy this thing, and thank you for telling me what it is. but the grant funding helped fund the control panel, as you correctly point out. And I mean, Pat, maybe I'll put you on the spot: is how does the grant? Did the grants you receive help you as an organization, KHOI?
Oh, you know, early on, it was the money that really provided that critical funding at a critical time of the operation. Without that money, I don't know. It's hard to speculate. I mean, it's always a struggle. But when your community visions are being realized and other people are appreciating that, to the point where they're going to feel like contributing financial benevolence, well, it doesn't get much better than that.
Yeah, absolutely right.
Yeah.
I know Vern was pretty closely tied with a grant we gave last year to Food at First. And can you talk about that, Vern?
Sure. For about almost 10 years now, the Ames community has been providing a service called Food at First, in which individuals who are in need of meal help can go, no questions asked, have a meal 7 days a week. And then also that same service is kind of a side provides a market 2 days a week where individuals can pick up food items for their home. It does not rely on any government support, because when you get government support, you have to document that the individuals are in need. You have to go through a process in which individuals say what their income is and that kind of thing, which can be kind of discouraging for individuals mm-hmm. who are just kind of temporarily down on their luck. So Food at First just puts aside all of that and says, no, anybody who wants, needs a meal can come. That means, though, that since they're not meeting federal guidelines, they have to rely on support from the community that doesn't go through those government processes. That is one of the things then that we were able to help. The Story County Community Foundation, they need refrigeration equipment and that kind of thing to keep their foodstuffs safe. And we were able to help fund. We were provided a $6,000 grant. That was a portion of a larger grant that they needed. They needed about $25,000 worth of refrigeration equipment. But as you were indicating a little earlier, every little bit helps, and this helped put them over the top. And so they were able to get the refrigeration equipment that they needed to help supplement that food service that they're providing.
Well, this is fabulous. This is Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio. We're speaking with Jennifer Garst and Vern Hawkins. And Jennifer is the executive director of the foundation. Vern Hawkins is a foundation board member. And we are discussing the community grants currently available to the Story County service groups. The deadline is September 30th. Any last words?
www.storycountyfoundation.org.
And one final thing, we've been talking about $6,000 grants. If you happen to need $5,400, you can still apply. Okay. It doesn't have to be exactly $6,000. Yeah. We've given several grants of $2,500, $3,500. Mm-hmm. The maximum is $6,000. But if you're under that, still apply. We will consider your application.
Oh, that's just fabulous. Well, thank you so much for all you do for the Ames community in Central Iowa. It's just fabulous having you. Well, joining us in the studio.
Well, thank you, and also thank you for helping us spread the word.
There you go. It's our pleasure. This is Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio, where we explore the people, events, and story in Central Iowa, as well as the citizens of the natural world. You were just hearing drum music from the Anishinaabe Drum Group, recorded live at a Prairie Awakening Celebration. This annual festival, the Prairie Awakening Celebration, will occur this weekend on Saturday, September 12th from 3 to 9 p.m. this coming weekend. The annual Prairie Awakening Festival will be happening in Dallas County, just southwest of Ames. This festival is held every year in a prairie area at the Keene Conservation Area. A beautiful piece of land that includes prairie and forest along the Raccoon River. This festival is put on by Dallas County Conservation Board with the help of many volunteers and in collaboration with numerous Native American tribes. The festival is built around and uses traditional Native ceremonies and festivities and focus almost entirely on Native culture. It is a rare opportunity to experience traditions that have existed in this area for eons. The Prairie Awakening brings together Native dancers, drums, and presenters to this special spot in central Iowa where prairie land has been reconstructed. The Native drum has returned to the Raccoon River Valley. Hello, Chris. This is Pat Schlarbaum.
Hey, Pat. How are you?
Well, welcome to KHOI Community Radio. Chris
hey,
Atkins,
thank you.
Yeah, naturalist with the story with the Dallas County Conservation Board. Tell us a little bit about your Prairie Awakening.
Well, Pat, it's in its 18th year, and it's an attempt by Dallas County Conservation to awaken a prairie, not just by planting the proper seed mix and fire regimen, but by putting a missing component, people, back in the prairie. And our answer to how do we do that was to bring the first voices, music, songs, and dances of First Peoples back to the prairie and use it as an invitation to invite our current residents to come awaken themselves in the prairie as we reawaken those first cultures now.
And this is your 18th year. I understand you have differing themes each year. What are you planning to feature this year?
This year, Pat, the theme is a Lakota word, Woki Suye, which means remembrance or don't forget. And so given that we're 18 years into it, we realize that there are probably some folks that are coming that really don't know how this started, what it means to wake up a prairie, why we're trying to wake up the prairie, why it's so important that we do this, and why it needs to continue in the future. So we've got a world-renowned storyteller, Jerome Killsmall, that's been involved with Celebration since its inception, and he's going to come render that story in the arena cut in the tall grass prairie at Keene Conservation, Pat. And along with that, one of the instrumental people in starting this, one of the people behind the whole thing, was Maria Pearson, and a longtime friend and colleague, and they did a lot of work together in the protection and writing legislation to protect burial mounds and sacred sites of First Peoples, Maria Pearson. And so Dr. David Gradwall, retired from ISU, is going to come tell Maria's story and her involvement with Prairie Awakening and her involvement in the larger story of the protection of sacred sites for First Nation peoples.
Yeah, we'll be including Dr. Gradwall here shortly. But I think it's good to point out that Maria Pearson was a citizen of Ames, Iowa, and before her passing in 2003. And you mentioned the repatriation. Could you give us a little more background on Maria's work concerning the repatriation or the returning of sacred remains of Native people back to the earth?
Well, Pat, I'm glad you're going to have David on because I'm sure he can give your audience a really great personal story as he was involved with it. But what it goes down to is back in the early 70s, our culture had its circle of ethics drawn, and it did not include First Nations people. So when their burial sites were encountered, they were treated as just archaeological evidence and not as people. And there are a number of events that occurred in Maria's life which led her to start a campaign, crusade, however you'd like to call it, to get that changed. And she was instrumental in getting legislation written in Iowa, which extended our circle of ethics to include people that maybe didn't look like my European ancestors or yours and the first peoples of this place. And so with that legislation, it then protected their burial sites and their sacred sites. And Maria's work then extended not only from Iowa, where it originated, to where it's now been adopted in all 50 states. And she took her work then worldwide and was recognized by being nominated twice for a Nobel Peace Prize for her work. That so Ames should be awfully proud of being able to call Maria one of their own.
Yeah, absolutely. And you're talking about a place, a very special place. Let's give the listeners some directions out to the Keene Conservation Area, southwest of Adel.
Well, two ways to get into it, Pat. The easiest is probably just to come west out of Des Moines on I-80 and get off on exit 104, the Earlham exit. And as you exit the interstate there, you'll be able to pick up directional signs, the large brown signs with white arrowheads that are the standard fare for Iowa County conservation sites. And just follow those about 4 miles north of the interstate to reach the Keene Conservation Area, and there'll be parking there. The event starts at 3 with a grand opening and entry and posting of the flags and the staffs, and then it's an afternoon of drumming and song and dance and storytelling and flute music. So all those are means to awaken a prairie and to awaken the participants themselves there in the prairie path. If somebody needs more direction than that, they can sure call our administrative office in Perry at Forest Park. The number is 465-3577.
465-3577. And also those directions will be on our website.
Sure.
Anything else you'd like to share this morning?
Oh, Pat, I know you and I had talked, and, you know, we said, given that this year with the Wokisie, the remembrance that I wonder what Maria would say we need to remember, and I've been pondering that, and I think what she would want us to remember and what hopefully all of us at the celebration will remember is as we heal this landscape and awaken it, what I've learned in 18 years is we're actually healing ourselves. And so it's a process of finding ourselves at home in this place, and as we heal it, maybe not what we set out to do the first time around, but we come to realize that in healing this wild place, we're remembering and honoring and healing those wild places that reside in us also.
Yeah, it's a dual purpose. Sounds like you're going to encourage people to come out and appreciate the natural resources of Dallas County, the prairie, the skies, the warmth of the sun, and in the process, do some good family entertainment in healing ourselves. So this is fabulous. Thank you, Chris Adkins.
Thank you, brother.
This is KHOI Community Radio, 89.1 FM, where we explore the people, stories, and events in central Iowa. I'm your host for today, Pat Schlarbaum, and we just heard from one of the main coordinators of this very special event, Chris Adkins, and it's all about the Prairie Awakening, Saturday, 3 to 9. He didn't mention Dallas Chief Eagle, but if you want to enjoy a world-class hoop dancer, a lot of participants and a lot of people coming to Iowa to share their talents. So let's go a bit deeper and include someone special to the Ames community, Dr. David Gradwall.
Well, welcome, David, to Local Talk.
Glad to be here.
Yeah, and we heard your name. You're going to be presenting at the 18th Annual Prairie Awakening.
Yes, I am. I consider it a real honor to be asked to appear there and tell part of the story of Maria Pearson, who was very instrumental in starting the Prairie Awakening.
And you live here in Ames.
Yes.
Can you give us a little background?
Well, I came here in 1962. Never found that better job. So I was with Iowa State University. I've been associated for 53 years with Iowa State University. I'm retired now, but we like Ames, and so we're still living here.
Yeah, you and your wife, Hannah.
Yes.
Yeah, you really contribute to our community in loving ways, beautiful ways. And you're contributing to the Dallas County Prairie Awakening.
Yes.
How did that invitation come about?
Chris Atkins, who's with the Dallas County Conservation Board, invited me. This year they're dedicating the Prairie Awakening to Maria Pearson and her work in behalf of Indian rights, but particularly the preservation of Indian burial mounds and the repatriation of American Indian skeletal remains and sacred objects that have been dug up in the past and stored in museums.
And you're an emeritus professor in archaeology.
Anthropology and archaeology, yes. And I worked with Maria, and we became very close friends.
Oh, so you're the natural one to kind of share her life.
Well, one of many. She worked with a lot of people.
What are you hoping you'll be able to provide visitors to this event?
Well, I think there are a lot of people that don't know the story of Maria and the work that she did with many organizations across the state. Really, the work of the Dallas County Conservation Board and Maria are really stellar in terms of preservation of environment, of prairie plants and animals, but also the history, and particularly the Native American history of the Kuhn Preserve in particular, where there are Native American remains from the past.
Is it your love of archaeology then that links you to the Native community in this way?
Well, I think so. I grew up in Nebraska, and actually in the schools there, they had quite a bit of material on American Indians, the Pawnee and the Omaha and the Sioux. They were part of Nebraska, and I had the exemplar that our wonderful state capitol building in Lincoln has a lot of Indian art, the names of the tribes inscribed in the stone, and magnificent Art Deco and Art Nouveau pieces drawing their inspiration from Native Americans. So I think it was part of my upbringing. As I went into anthropology, I specialized in the ethnology and archaeology of the prairies and plains where I grew up and consider it my home.
And Maria Pearson, a woman of the Yankton Nation, was also a resident here in Ames.
Yes. When I first met her, she was still living in Marnie, Iowa. And I met her in terms of the work that she was doing in 1971 when they excavated a number of burials near Glenwood in an area that was being destroyed for a highway. And they reburied something like 20 or 21 white pioneer settlers, but there were the remains of a young Native American woman, which they did not rebury, which she considered, and I do too, discrimination. I also consider it bad anthropology. They should have studied everybody and then reburied everybody. Yeah. But this became an issue, and so I was one of the archaeologists that worked with Maria to try to get the burial code changed in Iowa so that Native American remains would not be dug up.
Yeah, that was very near and dear to her heart, I understand, and her grandmother.
Yes, it was. She took the inspiration from the teachings of her grandmother and the instructions of her grandmother to stand up for her people, and it took a lot of courage on her part.
Mm-hmm. And then, so then through the years, your association working with other projects and
yes, we worked on a number of projects, mm-hmm. and became good friends. Sometimes they called us the odd couple, the Indian activist and the archaeologist, but we in Iowa have a very good record of working with Native Americans for positive purposes, and trying to listen to each other and understand each other. And actually, in 1996, Maria adopted my wife and me into the Turtle Clan of the Yankton tribe, and that mm-hmm. was certainly a very high honor for both of us.
Congratulations on that. The oral traditions, in a way, you'll be presenting a lot of Maria's
life. Well, I've been asked to tell Maria's story, and of course nobody can tell anyone else's story like they would tell it, but I will do my best. I finally got her to dictate her story, and we were able to print it in a couple of books that we published.
Oh, now, what are those books?
Well, a chapter in the revised edition of The World's Between Two Rivers, and then also Still Running, story of Maria Pearson, that came out of the Iowa Archaeological Society and the Office of the State Archaeologist. There are published versions. It will be an interesting experience for me because I think the powwow oratory, the rhetorical style, is much different than the lecture hall where, that I'm used to. But I will try to tell her story the best I can.
Just speak from the heart. Maria will probably help you from there. Well, why do you suppose this event mattered to Maria Pearson?
Well, it was a very important part of her life in establishing the Prairie Awakening. I think she tried very hard to work for cross-cultural understanding and for people to acknowledge that Native Americans have been here and still are here. They're not extinct. And to just lead to better understanding and knowledge on both sides of the line.
That was David Gradwell. Thank you, Dr. Gradwell. And this is Local Talk on KHOY Community Radio. David Gradwell, retired ISU anthropology professor, speaking about the Prairie Awakening Festival coming up this Saturday, September 12th, from 3 to 9 p.m. It is held every year at the Keene Conservation Area in Dallas County. Well, also in the studio this morning, we're being joined by Keith Morgan with the Story County Emergency Coordination Group and also Mr. Ron Edwards. This month, he has brought Mr. Edwards with him because, as he promised, he will be speaking with us about how we can care for our animals during emergencies. Ron is the Animal Control Supervisor, Ames Animal Shelter and Animal Control. Today, we want to talk about both emergency preparedness for urban pet owners and domestic livestock producers. But before we get into that, can you say a word about the recent flooding conditions? What's been happening there, Mr. Morgan? And
well,
good morning.
Good morning. Yes, we, as most folks know, we had some flooding here. We have two big basins that feed into the Story County area. The first one is obviously the Skunk Basin, which is runs on up through Hamilton County into Hardin County, and the Squaw, which is a little bit more off to the west. We had quite a bit of rain that just barely missed deluging the top part of the Skunk River completely. So we could see that was happening with the 9 inches over by Dayton and like that, and we immediately began to monitor the National Weather Service flood gauges. And starting up in Story County, we started working with the fire chief and law enforcement up there, monitoring one of the flood gauges just north of Story City. And we were able to get ahead of the flood and close off some roads that we knew were going to flood. Then we began working with the waterworks folks here in Ames to look at their models on the flooding and to try and predict what areas might be impacted. So, again, we could stay ahead of the flood. Mm-hmm. And as it moved on down through by Cambridge and like that, we were in contact with people from the Cambridge area so that they could take some preparatory actions. The thing for people to know across the county is National Weather Service has got will allow you to see those flood gauges so that you, if you live near either the Squaw or the Skunk, can be monitoring and be able to take action should the river start to get towards a flood stage.
Boy, and I guess with climate change, we're approaching these areas where a 9-inch rainfall in central Iowa in August, in September. It's just
9 inches, and we had quite a bit just last weekend. Fortunately for us, it was a little bit further south and west of us.
Well, Mr. Ron Edwards, you've joined us this morning to talk about animal preparedness and how we can deal with our pets and our domestic Animals. Good morning, Mr. Edwards.
Good morning. Thank you for having us today. It's extremely important that that people prepare before the disaster and have all the necessities that they need to take care of their pets. As the animal shelter and animal control here in Ames, we will do all that we can to assist pet owners, but we also have to be mindful that we have to take care of the animals at the animal shelter first. And if we have to evacuate the shelter, that's a huge task that we've got to take on there. So,
has that ever happened? Where are you located?
We're just off Billy Sunday Road, so just south of Highway 30.
Essentially in the floodplain.
Absolutely. Yeah. Yep. Yeah. So we have not had to evacuate the shelter. My understanding, I've been there for 2 years now. We haven't since I've been there, of course. But I understand that there was floodwaters up in that area at one point. So it is definitely a possibility and something that we absolutely have to be prepared for.
Well, you got to take care of your own right on site. But it's wonderful that people can have a little preparedness process undergoing this morning and that you're available.
Absolutely.
Well, let's go into some of the notice identification, some of the things that people can do today.
Absolutely. And again, preparing now for something that may happen is extremely important. You want to make sure, number one, your pet always has its rabies tag and identification on. So if it becomes lost in any kind of event, disaster, that we know who to return it back to. So make sure you have cell phone numbers. It's always good to have additional emergency contact numbers on identification for pets. So if we can't reach you in the disaster area, we may be able to reach someone that lives outside of the disaster zone.
Well, this is Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio, and I'm Pat Schlarbaum this morning, and we are talking with Mr. Keith Morgan, Story County Emergency Coordinator, and Mr. Ron Edwards, Animal Control Supervisor with the Ames Animal Shelter and Animal Control. We're talking about the care for domestic and farm animals during emergencies. We have talked at some length about preparing for possible emergencies. What about when something does happen?
Well, it's the reason that Ron's here and part of my job is to make a coordinated effort on this. We have found in recent disasters that a lot of people, when the time comes that we ask them to evacuate, will not evacuate unless they know that their pets are going to be taken care of. So for me, what I'm looking at is the evacuation of the people, the evacuations of the pets and their sheltering, mm-hmm. along with everything else that's going on. This is a great example of how I try and divide things on up and let some of the experts like Ron work with the folks that are evacuating and also work with our sheltering folks mm-hmm. so that we can try and put our pet shelters near where the people are evacuating so that they can also be a part of the team. Hopefully they can be in their shelter and help be a part of taking care of their pets, walking them, caring for them while they're there. And also they'll have brought along some of these things that we've listed so that they can also help feed their pet and have a water bowl. Little things like that can make it so that if we all take a little part of emergency preparedness, we're much, much better at it.
Well, and thank you so much for that. Empowering your partners and encouraging them to take on that ownership, if you will, and that gets transferred right to the citizens of Story County. Well, the leading causes of death of large animals and tornadoes or these rain events or similar events, collapsed barns, you know, once we've kind of focused on the floods, but there's also a tornado situation that people of Story County can unfortunately have to endure. What are some of those suggestions that you have for during those big wind events?
Well, obviously upkeep of the buildings. You see the barns don't seem to get the attention that they used to. So to make sure that you have a good, strong structure for the animals is probably the most important part of it. Paying attention, again, it's flooding that we just talked about. If people will pay attention to the flood gauges, and if they live in an area that's flood prone and they have livestock that's out in the fields, to move them out of areas where they could potentially be stranded early so that we're not having to do a rescue later on is an important part. And again, that stuff's all on the web and it's easy for them to be able to see and to get an idea on whether they need to act early to try and reduce the amount of effort we have to do to care across the county.
Hope people have, the listeners have their pencils. What was that website again?
It's the National Weather Service website, and then on the left-hand side, it's got rivers and streams. You can click on that, and then you can go down and look at each individual of the flood gauges that are all along the Squaw and the Skunk River tributaries.
And I'm seeing here the a necessity for a farm kit.
Yes. The idea behind that is, again, that if you have to – just like if you have to move small animals, if you have to move large animals to make sure that you have halters and things like that to be able to move them. And our community is great here, and I have seen it a couple of times where the producers, the livestock producers, have worked together well to be able to help each other take care of their animals in these times. But a little bit of preparedness on the part of the producer can go a long way.
And the feeding, I guess that'll be the first thing at some point. You're going to have to address that. Might as well be prepared with your feeding regimes and good water.
Feeding, and also just like with the urban animals, having good documentation is very, very important, even on the domestic side, because it can be quite a bit of a risk for one producer to help out another producer if he doesn't know that those animals have got all of the proper inoculations.
Well, the alternative water and power sources, I'm sure those that have some forethought will be looking at generators and having those things available also.
Yes, so that, again, especially in the wintertime, if there's extended outages, that they can make sure that they can maintain water for their animals will be very, very important. And also heat requirements for certain livestock.
Well, we've kind of focused on a big climate event, which would include tornadoes or and the whole community is impacted by the tornadoes or the floods. But how about just a fire in the barn? You may just be affecting your domicile and not necessarily the community. What are some of your guidelines or suggestions there?
Obviously, to make sure that your electrical systems and heating systems, we are moving into the wintertime. They will be needed a lot more. Probably good to get them checked, get them cleaned to make sure that there's not dust or that there's no fraying of any of the electrical system, because you're correct, electrical fires, especially if you have quite a bit of livestock in any one facility, it can be rather tragic if you do have a large fire.
Well, they do occur, and it's just wise to have some preparedness. I hope people are hearing this call to arms, if you will, or call to action.
Yes, sir.
If you will, because you gentlemen are available to assist the community, and hopefully that community is going to be made up of members that are also tuned into these potential calamities that, if we're not prepared, we'll have to endure something that can be the impacts can be minimized or lessened.
I'm sure that they, Ron, you've got ways that people can contact you to be able to get more information. Do you want to give the listeners some of that?
Sure. We do have some basic information on our website, which is cityofames.org/animal shelter. But contacting the shelter and knowing, you know, the services that we provide, and again, it's going to depend on the situation and the disaster. But we are here for the residents and Ames in the community. We also do want to partner with other animal shelters that we're working on the greater Story County area. So working with them to make sure that we are providing for the animals in our community during time of need, when we can be there to help the people with that.
Well, it's sure comforting to know that there are these public facilities that are addressing the potential hard times. We do the best we can to enjoy each day and make the most of it, but during hard times, people of your caliber are appreciated very much.
And we're relying on Ron. Ron brings a wealth of experience coming from the California area, and he has seen large-scale disasters that have involved pets. And again, he's the expert on it, and we're leaning on him to help educate us in my office.
Mm-hmm. Well, any last words? We've got – this is Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio, and we're talking with Keith Morgan, Story County Emergency Coordinator, and Mr. Ron Edwards, Animal Control Supervisor with the Ames Animal Shelter and Animal Control, about caring for animals in emergencies. Any last words?
If you want more information, our Story County Emergency Management website that's on the Story County website is also has some links to preparedness information for pets in disasters.
Well, thank you so much for coming. Appreciate all your work. Appreciate all you do for the Ames community.
Appreciate the opportunity to talk to the listeners.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you, Mr. Edwards. And this is Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio, where we've been talking with Keith Morgan and Ron Edwards. Thank you for coming.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you to all our guests today, Keith Morgan, Ron Edwards, David Gradwall, Chris Adkins, Jennifer Garst, and Vern Hawkins. Our theme song is Backtracking by Al Harris and Tom Richards, from their CD, The Ballad of Kate Shelley. I might mention that the drum music heard on today's show was the Anishinaabe drum group, recorded live at a prior Prairie Awakening celebration. The Prairie Awakening celebration will occur this weekend on Saturday, September 12th, from 3 to 9 p.m. A link to information about that will be available on our website, KHOI-FM, by the end of today. Recent shows will be posted on our homepage as soon as our webmaster, Ron Carson, can get the information. There we will find lists of our guests and links to the organizations and other resources mentioned on our shows. You can listen to this show and all our past Local Talk shows online at the website, khoifm.org. That's khoifm.org, where you'll find an archive for all of the Local Talk shows. I mentioned we've featured Maria Pearson last year on October 24th. So in the archives of 10/24/2014, you can learn more about Maria Pearson. And also a little more in-depth interview about the Prairie Awakening was last September 3rd in 2014. You'll have a complete show that discussed all of the beautiful ramifications of a Prairie Awakening in Dallas County, Iowa. If you enjoyed this show, tell your friends and consider becoming one of the 500 families donating $20 per month or $25 per year to help us meet our operating expenses, though we'd appreciate whatever fits into your budget. We'd also like to hear feedback either by phone at 515-292-2878 or by email at khoiradio@gmail.com with news in the subject. That's khoiradio@gmail.com. Local Talk is a radio production, training workshop, as well as a radio show. If you'd like to join the team as a reporter, contact us at 292-2878 or at the email khoiradio@gmail.com. Your participation as audience is what makes KHOI possible. Thank you for listening and see you again on the radio.
listen.